This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. Mary Baldwin Professor Sarah Kennedy's engagement with 16th century history is almost palpable. The woman sparkles whenever she talks about England during Tudor times. But she gets especially sparkly when she's talking about her first novel, The Altarpiece, which is set in Tudor times. Sarah Kennedy describes the book as an historical mystery.
It's really hard for me to separate history and mystery. You know, those are two things that I think about all the time because I love history. And I really want the historical details to be historically accurate. But I don't want it to be just another historical novel in which famous people do the things that we all know that they did, and we see it from yet another person's point of view. I really wanted there to be a different kind of story there. I got the idea for the plot, which I won't give away the ending of, from an actual story that I heard in the UK when I was visiting there one time. And I've changed the people and the places and all of that.
To protect the innocent.
Yes, to protect the innocent.
What was the story?
It's set in 1535, and Henry VIII is king. He has broken away from Rome, and it's right at the beginning of the dissolution of the convents and the monasteries. And my book is set in Mount Grace, which is an actual place, though there was a monastery there, not a convent. So I've taken their town and changed it around. Yes, I have. And the convent has come under some criticism for maybe some immoral behavior. And so they're one of the first in line to be closed.
Now, what was immoral behavior in the context of 1535?
Well, it could be any number of things. In my book, complicating factors is that there is a sort of nouveau riche family nearby, and the heir of this estate's got connections at court, and so he has manipulated his way into favor for getting this property. So he wants the convent closed right away because he wants it to increase his sheep holdings. And the wool trade was really getting underway in England at this time, and there was a lot more trade with the continent. English wool was the fabric to have. So when the book opens, this young nun named Catherine Havens knows that the soldiers are coming and they're going to close the convent, and she doesn't know what she's going to do. She's very well educated. She's been trained as a physician. She works in the village probably more than she should, doing things that she probably shouldn't be doing.
With herbs.
Well, with herbs and with surgery. Religious people were not supposed to let blood. But she's actually been doing it. She's been delivering children. She's been setting bones. She's been lancing cysts. I mean, she's been doing a lot of
bloody stuff.
Yes, sketchy kind of stuff. So when the convent closes, she doesn't know what she's going to do. You know, she's a young woman. She could marry, but who is she going to marry? And then what is her life going to be like? She's Roman Catholic. She's going to have to take the oath of succession, and she's going to have to convert.
To Henry.
Or she's going to have to hide her faith. Already people are being required to subscribe to the act of supremacy, and she doesn't want to do it. She doesn't approve of Henry. So when the novel opens, she's making out her will, and she's deciding what she's going to do with her books and stuff that she has illuminated and gathered over the course of the years. And she's up late at night doing this when all the other nuns are asleep, and she's hiding her books under the floor so they won't get seized when the soldiers come in. And she hears people in the church, and she hides for a while, and then her friend Anne comes and says, you know, what are you doing awake? You should be asleep. What are you wasting your time on? And as they're coming back through, they see an open door, and they go in and to investigate to see somebody's, you know, vandalizing. And in the course of walking around this church with their little candles, they look up and they discover that their altarpiece, which is the one thing they have that's really worth something, has been taken.
Hence the title.
Yes.
Hence the mystery.
Right. Right.
Do you remember when you got the idea for this?
The story of the altarpiece had been hanging around in the back of my mind for a long time.
You just liked it.
I liked it.
Yeah.
And I write a lot of historical poetry, and I had been writing lots of historical poems about women everywhere from Julian of Norwich in the 14th century, you know, up through the 18th century. I really like recreating historical women. Marjorie Kemp is one of my favorites, though lots of people don't care for Marjorie Kemp. Anyway, I had this story in the back of my mind, and I was writing historical poems. And one day, my husband and I were in a bookstore down in South Carolina, and I was looking at historical fiction, historical crime novels. I love historical crime novels. And I just thought, I'm going to go home and write one of these. And I just had this image in my head suddenly of this nun standing in the room that would have been above the porch in the church. And she's looking out one of those long, narrow windows. And she's looking south down the road into the village, and she can see the soldiers coming.
And that was it.
That was where I started. That's not the beginning of the novel now, but that was the scene that launched the novel.
That you inhabited and said, there it is.
Yeah.
Before we go on, who is Marjorie Kemp?
Oh, Marjorie Kemp, she was a mystic in the 14th century. She wrote the first autobiography in the English language. First one by a woman. Oh, yes, I've read it. And what's one of the things I love about Marjorie is that she was just so determined. And as it turned out, the monastery that was at Mount Grace, which is where my story is set, actually had one of the only manuscript copies of Marjorie Kemp's manuscript. And so I have Catherine having a copy of Marjorie Kemp's manuscript. And it's one of her very, very dear possessions. And everybody else says, oh, that woman was crazy. You don't need that. Nobody will take that. But it is one of the things Catherine holds dear to her heart.
So you're having fun.
Oh, I'm having a blast.
Now, why this period in history? You're a professor.
I am, and I teach early British literature. I teach the 16th and 17th centuries. Mm-hmm. But the 16th century in England is such a seminal time. Things change so much. It's when the Renaissance really hits England. I mean, England is slow. The Renaissance is already old news over in Italy, but in England, it's new. It's the time when the church breaks apart. It's the time when people both begin to question autonomous political power and when that very political power is being consolidated in the crown. So it's a time of violence and violent change. It's the century of strong women leaders. It is the century of two queens regnant over this very, very patriarchal culture. So it is really the foundation for me of my understanding of English literature and English thinking. It's also this fabulous time of these larger-than-life personalities and the clothing and the food and the rhetoric and the literature. And, you know, this is the world out of which Shakespeare comes.
It's one thing to study history. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to inhabit 16th century England, which is what you've done in the altarpiece. How you go about doing that?
Well, I think you have to let the characters come to life in your mind.
Uh-huh.
And you have to allow them to talk. And they will talk to you in funny ways. I have always gotten underway with a project once I've begun to hear my characters talk to me. It's how I started writing historical poems, is that I was reading historical materials and historical manuscripts and literature. And in the quiet times, you hear the voices begin. And if you attend to the voices, they will come to life. And this character came to life for me.
Catherine, the character who came
Catherine,
to life
yes,
first.
Yes, was Catherine. And then she suddenly had a friend, and this friend was Anne Smith. And Anne Smith is as real to me as any person that I know, and I love her. But, you know, it's funny, my husband was rereading the altarpiece the other night when we lost power, and we were sitting there with our flashlights reading, and he asked me where the character of Christina Havens came from, Catherine's adopted mother. And I said, she's not based on anybody. She just came into my mind waggling her finger, saying, I'll bring down the fist of God on you, girl. Just sort of whole cloth. She just came through a door, and there she was.
How about the domestic landscape that these people are moving through? Where'd that come from?
Well, it's partly scholarly research, but I have
Which
always...
Which you've done for a long time.
A long time. And I love doing it. But it's always interesting to me, when I'm teaching literature, what kinds of daily lives this work comes out of. I mean, I know what a writer's life is like now, but what would it have been like to be a woman in 1535? How would you make your food? How would you get your soap? How would you wash your clothes? How do you get rid of the stuff from the kitchen? I'm just really interested in that. I've always been interested in the way people can live lives beyond technology. And that's been my interest for a long time. I've always been interested in people's connection to the land and to each other. And it's almost impossible for us to imagine how, if nothing else, how dark their world would have been. Because up in the north of England, you get very, very short days. And in the wintertime, the sun barely crests the horizon on the south. And when it's night, it's dark and it's frightening. And I've always been fascinated with how people living in such, what to us would be dire circumstances. I mean, I just think about last week when we were out of power for 2 days.
Yes,
and
we were appalled.
My husband and I were just, you know, going crazy. We have to get to town. I need some coffee. But, you know, these were people who in this kind of a life where you have to go out and dig in the dirt for your food. What do you eat in the first week of January in the
north
of England?
And it's routine, too.
It is. This is just life. And yet, out of that, people manage to find time and space to write, to paint, to record their thoughts, to illuminate their books. It's just fascinating to me that out of this daily drudgery of just staying alive, that people still manage to rise above that and make beautiful things.
How long did it take you to write the altarpiece, a draft that you wanted to let somebody read?
About a year and a half. My husband read it. My husband is always my first and best reader. And he said, yes, it's really good. There's not much of a story here. Oh, I didn't know what he meant by that. So I went back and I reread it. Yes, there's a story here. But I think the story was mostly in my head. And what I had gotten down on the page were chunks of stuff.
Story.
And what I really lacked was a clear, fast-moving plot. And it really wasn't until I had finished the manuscript and I'd put it aside for about 6 months and I was thinking about it and thinking about it. I was finishing a poetry manuscript. And then I went to a conference in Nashville. This conference is called Killer Nashville. And anyone who is an aspiring novelist, I recommend you go to Killer Nashville because the panels were so good. And I met wonderful people and we talked about stuff. And what I discovered was how to make a plot, which is what I didn't know before being a poet. I knew how to make 35 lines and then the end, and click it shut. And I came home after going to Killer Nashville and I sat down and I read it again and I thought, oh, I get it. I get it. And in a kind of white heat of 3 months, I completely rewrote it. Then I sent it off to Knox Robinson and they took it.
Are you going to be doing more books for this publisher, for Knox Robinson?
Yeah, I am. All the Catherine Havens books will be with
Knox
Robinson.
Brag if you have a contract.
Oh, yes, I do have a contract with Knox Robinson for this character and this series. So anything that happens to Catherine will come through Knox Robinson Publishing.
The actual book arrives and it's now happening. You've written this book and it's now being published.
Yeah.
How are you experiencing that? What is that like?
Oh, it's terrifying. I mean, it's so exciting, but it is terrifying, I have to admit. You know, I was telling you, I've looked at the cover of this book so often in emails, and it's the wallpaper on my computer screen, and I've sent it to so many people, but then it arrived in the mail, and I opened the box, and there are all these copies of The Altarpiece, and it's a real book, and it has a cover, and I can hold it in my hands, and oh my goodness. So, yeah, I mean, it's exhilarating. Publishing your first novel is like, I don't know, it's like nothing else I have experienced, but it is also scary because now people are reading it and sending me emails about it.
Sarah Kennedy tells the story of Marjorie Kemp, the world's first woman autobiographer, and reads a few pages of her historical mystery, The Altarpiece, on the Spark page at WMRA.org. Saturday, March 23rd, Sarah will be at the Virginia Festival of the Book on the panel Crime Wave, Murder in the Name of God.